Hi, I'm Matthew Schwartz, Executive Editor with Information Security Media Group. It's my pleasure to sit down with Jeff Moss, the founder of the annual Black Hat Conference. Jeff, so good to see you again.
Yeah, it feels like just yesterday.
Accelerationism was one of the trends or ideas that you've been talking about at this year's conference because things just seem to be happening so fast lately.
Yeah, and so I was thinking, like, what term do you use to show you think things are seem to be happening faster? And acceleration has been an idea that's been around for a number of years. And there's like whole philosophies of acceleration. There's different schools of accelerationism. And I didn't really want to get into that. But what I was trying to tap into was there's a certain mindset that thinks that if change is going to happen, you may as well make it happen sooner, get to the end state sooner. And some of the early accelerationists were trying to get to sort of this digital singularity. Right, whether it's general AI is the current thing people are obsessed with, or a merging of human and computers, which is kind of what it was previously. It's taken on different meanings for people on different political spectrums, right? And when I got on the airplane to fly here, I took off and the world was kind of okay. When I landed, there was a coup attempt in South Korea. And then the French government had a no confidence vote. Then just yesterday, I guess, the German chancellor announces they're going to have like a no-confidence vote in Germany. And that could change the whole government there. And that's not to go with, I think sometime last week, Syria fell. Right? The whole Middle East power structures just changed. You know, Israel. I mean, it's happening so quickly. And each one of those things would be a topic of concern or conversation. But all at once, it really feels like everything's accelerating. And I remember talking to some friends, and we were speculating what happens under a new president in America, right? If Biden's elected, Biden's reelected, or then Harris is elected, it's really a continuation. It's predictable. You kind of know what you're getting, right? There's not a lot of, but with a second Trump term, like, you're not quite sure what you're going to get. So there's going to be a lot of unpredictability, a lot of chaos initially. And so we were speculating, well, what happens during that chaotic period, right, as everything's getting sorted out? And my friend and I were guessing that Iran's going to want to know what the new rules are. What can they get away with? What are the new rules of the road? Russia's going to want to know what they can get away with in Ukraine. Ukraine's going to want to know if the rules have changed. China's going to want to know about Taiwan. Taiwan's going to want to know about the U.S. North Korea's going to want to know about South. Everybody's going to want to know what the new American president, what kind of parameters, what kind of rules of the road they're going to have. But they're all going to try to figure it out at once. It's not like they all get in line and they take a ticket. Oh, it's Iran's month. Oh, you know, next month it's going to be Syria. And so there's going to be a lot of testing, we speculate, is going to happen. At the same time, a lot of other things are happening, technologically happening, right, politically happening. And so you add that all up, and it can get kind of overwhelming. And one of the ways people deal with stress is they kind of withdraw or they disengage. And part of the strategies of the people who are accelerationists is somewhat to overwhelm you, right, to give them space to keep doing what they're trying to do while other people withdraw because it's just too much, too fast, too much change, you know, or whatever. And so it's going to be really kind of rocky roads. And taking that example sort of into the security space, AI is causing a lot of disruption, a lot of acceleration of whether it's crime or it could be product development or login, whatever it is, wherever you want to apply your large language model or small language model, it's a lot of change. And for some people in information security, it's hard to grasp, right? And it's a big upheaval in their industry, probably the biggest, you know, more than cloud probably. Because cloud, you could just think of it as somebody else's computer, you know, computing at a distance, but not with AI. And so I think that's another sort of layer of existential sort of anxiety about their career, about, you know, layered on top of everything else. It really feels like things are kind of everything everywhere all at once.
A very well-titled movie.
Yes.
Which seems to have prefigured a little bit this era where it does seem like things are happening faster and faster and faster, and more often perhaps with the technological component. I mean, does history ever really happen faster, despite what people are asking for? What you were just saying brought to mind the early days of Gen AI and this insane drive to make it happen as fast as possible. And some people quitting, saying, no, you're going too far,
too fast.
And then at the same time, people going, well, what is it good for? How is it going to be used? Tell us what we need to know now. And people going, well, actually, we don't know yet.
We don't know.
So there's that tension as well of very hyped.
Gen AI is the first, like, I'm not convinced there's any money to be made in Gen AI, you know, images or copyright violations of training on Disney movies when you're not supposed to. But it's sort of like the I guess what you call the lowest hanging fruit. It's what it did first, easiest, best. It captured people's imagination. The, you know, we call it super autocomplete, right? It's auto-completing your sentences. It's helping you rewrite your words predictively based on 5,000 other English essays that it's read. It's not thinking, right? But it's super auto-completing, and that's really useful for certain things. But that's not going to be its best AI's best use case. It's going to be something else beyond it, right? If this is sort of the parlor trick, the real value is going to be in other areas. But you have to kind of get through this stage, right, the generative stage, to get to the other, what I believe is the more valuable. And so when I think about it, it's I think about AI as prediction, right? It's really good at, should I go right, should I go left? In this situation, should I turn on the light, should I turn off the lights? You know, out of 1,000 times when I see this sign, do I stop, do I, you know, and it's making predictions. And as GPUs and technology gets faster, it's making more predictions cheaper. Should the next pixel be red? Should the next audio tone be 3,200 kilohertz, whatever, as it's creating a voice or whatever? Well, as prediction becomes cheaper and faster, people will do more prediction. And so I always tell people, if I was in business and had an area with a lot of business problems, I would try to make all my business problems prediction problems. Because if you can convert your problem space into a prediction space, then AI is going to probably work really well for you. But if you can't make your problems prediction problems, then, you know, weather prediction is probably going to be great. You know, maybe stock market prediction, maybe, right? Those are predictive markets. You know, maybe even deciding what my, you know, kids want to eat for lunch, right? Based on what they've had previously, right? Maybe there's some prediction. But I'm sure there's some areas that are not, you know, prediction's not going to be very. So I think AI will invade that whole anything that can be a prediction problem. It reminds me of when modern science was happening and people started to understand biologically how people operated, and they realized, you know, you have this vascular system and this blood system. The way people described how humans worked, it was like, well, we're like a hydraulic system. It's all fluids. You have problems because you have pooling fluids in your stomach or whatever. And then they discovered the electrical system of your nervous system. Oh, now it's like an electrical system and you need to clean the wires. So you have a, and so whatever the analogy of the day is how we orient and how we think. And now we're all orienting to think about everything as a prediction. Probably there'll be another model, you know, 10, 15 years. But from the outside, it's fascinating because the concentration of power, the amount of energy, the amount of like investment to build some of these larger models, it's only in a handful of people. Now they can license it, they can lease it, you can timeshare, rent, but you never really own it like your C compiler, you know. OpenAI doesn't get the models unless they have warehouses of thousands of people in India data tagging. Like, I can't afford to pay thousands of people to data tag for years, right? And so there's a certain barrier to entry that I worry about. And any inherent biases in that data of the data tagging or anything else, it's just going to come through, right? And so we're so enamored by the deepfake that there's no real like way to determine or control for really some of the biases in the training data. And so I worry that governments are already thinking about, or insurance companies, I'll just outsource it to the algorithm. But you outsource it to the algorithm with all the biases, you're going to get the same biased results. But now they can say, oh, well, it's the algorithm, it's not me. And that's super negligent. That's what I worry about for my, you know, for the next generation. Like, why did my insurance rates go up? I don't know, it's the algorithm. Can you explain to me? Not really. You know, good luck. It's just going to be bumpy.
Could make for some interesting case law if things get to the point where California says, no, look, really, we want you to walk us through how it made this alarming decision. And they go, oh, that wasn't part of the shrink wrap. That wasn't the end user license agreement. We don't have access to that part.
All right, that's changed. It's all non-deterministic. It changed its model, blah, 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 blah. Like, oh. And you know that's what they want, right? Because that's an efficient, you know, they want more efficiency, but they don't want the hard work of
responsibility. They want to outsource whatever they can get away with.
Or you know, it doesn't have to be malicious. You know, it's like there's that famous case study about the hand sensor for the towel machine that was trained on data of North American Caucasians, right? It didn't work with dark-skinned people because that wasn't the training set. It wasn't that they were malicious engineers. Whatever the data set they bought was that, they trained it, it worked, they moved on, and it's like there was no sort of diversity concept in that data. Right, or whatever, yeah, just, and when they get the data, they think, well, this is the data, right? I train on this data and my thing works, and they don't know that they have to like figure out what's the diversity and distribution of the data and like what's the representation, and I have a feeling the same thing, it's gonna be like, you know, that writ large. And, you know, there's the other part that's a little troubling is there's sort of this geopolitical concept of great power competition around, you know, these AI models, and it's like this race, it's like a race to AI. Right, it's that Greenfield Chips Act. We have to. Whoever has the faster GPU, whoever has the better data, whoever has the. And I'm not 100% sold that that's true. I think China, with its really kind of integrated retailers, right, the Tencent, they can see your banking. They could see you buy something. They could see you spend the money. You know, they can see the whole. Where Amazon might see you buy something, and they'll try to get you to buy use an Amazon credit card so they can get some more data. But that's different than Google, right? And then Google sees the marketing, and then Facebook sees the social. But in China, they could, some of these giant companies, they can see it all. So you could argue that they have better data sets because they can see from a person saying something in your social media to an ad that you see to you purchasing, actually purchasing the thing to actually, you know, maybe that gives them better. So maybe they sell a little bit better. I don't know if that's the end of the world, you know? And so I don't quite see the consequence of I see consequences around military application and human rights around making decisions around are you going to grant a you know asylum thing based on some AI evaluation around you know market competition around auto you know trading stock you know I see other implications of it but I don't see a clear winner that dominates the world because they had I mean China has a 99% homogeneous society or more right. So their training data is going to be very homogenous based on their ethnicity, right, and their local customs. And training data in North America or Europe is quite diverse because there's so many different. So that's why I'm just not sure that better data in one country means that they get to dominate the rest of the world, right? But that's it's got everybody really excited.
Yeah, I noticed in the Black Hat Europe briefings, panoply of options, if you will, a lot of AI this year. Looking at, I don't want to say adding guardrails, but ways of maybe being able to use it more efficiently, or questions of where it can be used. There seems to have been an increase in maturity in the questions being asked around it, right. And how that applies to the cybersecurity community. Were you, as someone who reviews some of the entries, have things been looking better in terms of the nuance when it comes to using it?
Yeah, I think the questions are better. And I think now there's enough examples, right? And you can see with like in Europe, the CRA, the Cyber Resiliency Act, you know, legislators are getting interested in this. And so for example, Microsoft has a very sophisticated way of tracking the data that's used in generating their models. So they can find the provenance of which version of what data in which model. So something does go wrong or something is poisoned, they can go back and sort of regenerate the model with an unpoisoned. But I think it's because they either want to sell a product to customers and they're going to want these features, but it's maturing, right? I want to train only on my data. I don't need outside data. Or I'm going to get regulated. I want to be able to show I'm only using this approved data, not. So I think it's forcing the novelty stage is wearing off and it's starting to get all the normal regulatory and business questions. Autocomplete, great. Can I use it to train my engineers? You know, can I use it to rewrite code?
Can I use it to write code but not give away what it is I'm writing about? Right. Is there a way to VPN it almost or disintermediate what I might be asking with its ability to store what I ask?
Right, yeah. And so that now there's, you know, private models for OpenAI or Amazon or Google or whatever where like you basically get your own mini Google AI and then what you do there stays. So as a company you can, you know, create essentially a data lake or a training model. And so now I think companies are figuring out maybe the money is not in them trying to answer every question with a giant model. It's really helping other companies build models to answer the questions they care about. I think that's the maturity. And you know, governance, the questions are so sticky. You know, it's nice in the Cyber Resiliency Act, there's a sort of a responsible person requirement, right? Like, you don't want to ever be able to point to the AI and say the AI did it. It's like, no, there's somebody who's going to get up on, you know, get called in front of Congress or going to testify. Like, who's responsible? Is it Microsoft's engineering department? Fine. But you can't say it's nobody's responsibility. And I think that's the test case in Canada. We followed this Air Canada. Air Canada had a chatbot, and a customer had a relative that passed away. And so they were taking an bereavement flight. And so they were working with a chatbot, and they're trying to figure out, like, do you have the bereavement thing? Yes. And what's the cost and everything? And then it was like, do I need to present you the death certificate, you know, before I fly or before I book the ticket or at check-in or, you know, like, how does that work? What's your policy? And the chatbot says, you don't need to present it at check-in. You know, our policy is you don't need to present at check-in. Okay, great. He gets there, gets refused because the policy is you have to present it at check-in. But he has a screenshot of it. So he sues Air Canada, and some other people are backing the case because Air Canada is going through all these backflips to say, oh no, that's just the chatbot. We're not responsible. It's just the AI. But they are responsible because they built it and it's telling people what to do. And so anyways, it's working through the Canadian court system. So everybody's watching that one.
Jeff, thank you so much for your time and your insights. It's much appreciated.
You're welcome.
For ISNG, I'm Matthew Schwartz. Thank you for joining us.